Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 43, A Nonviolent Reformation, part 2. Dom Helder Camara's inspired teaching on the spiral of violence states that the sources of evil are the world, the flesh, and the devil, in that order. This model simply illustrates the three sources of evil and thus violence: the world at the bottom of the spiral, the flesh in the middle, and the devil at the top. If evil and institutionalized violence go unrecognized at the first level, the second and third are inevitable. By world, I'm not referring to creation, but to the system. It's the way groups, cultures, institutions, and nations organize themselves to be in control. This may be the most hidden, the most disguised, and the most denied level of evil. We cannot see it because we are inside of it, and because we cannot see beyond our own self-interest and self-protection. For example, I have been Christian all my life, and I have yet to hear a sermon on the 10th commandment. Do not covet your neighbor's goods. We live in an entire world of manufactured desire or covetousness. It is a virtue to seek to increase your goods. So it's almost impossible for an American to see capitalism or consumerism as a problem or a moral issue, because that is the way our world is shaped. It is in our hardwiring. It's difficult to critique the ground you are standing on. Thankfully, Pope John Paul II introduced to Catholic theology terms like structural evil, institutionalized sin, and corporate evil. We actually were not free to think this way until the 1960s, which produced hippies and worldwide upheavals and the Second Vatican Council. Still, only rare prophets like Dorothy Day and Thomas Merton dare to critique systems, groups, and institutions themselves. No surprise that even Pope Francis quoted both of these American prophets in his address to the U.S. Congress. Organized religion has put most of its concern at the middle level, the flesh. The flesh is not primarily what we think of as sexual sin. Rather, it is individualized sin, personal mistakes that you and I make. No one is denying that this is a level of evil and sin, and often the most apparent one. But when we only point our finger at the second level of the spiral, blaming individuals and punishing people, we are largely wasting our time. It doesn't work because we haven't first recognized that culturally we actually admire this vice. Pick any of the capital sins: greed, ambition, excess, vanity, pride, deception, lust. All are on broad public display, and these sinners are in fact the cool people. But then individuals are supposed to confess these as private sins, not that they do anymore. Up to now, there has been little recognition of the deep connection between culture and corporations, which are accepted because they give us our security and identity and wealth, and the personal evil things that individuals do. We are wasting time trying to make people feel guilty about being greedy, when in fact, Legitimated greed is the name of the game. We can't reward and promote it at one level and then shame it on the next level. We can't romanticize war, but then rail against the violence in our streets. It will not work. If guns are good in Iraq, then guns are good in Idaho. Cardinal Bernardin, who lived from 1928 to 1996, dared to call for a consistent ethic of life or a seamless garment morality. He said the church must be honest and start defending life in all of its stages from womb to tomb. We must stand against abortion, the destruction of the earth, the evil of war, the death penalty, euthanasia, and all policies that impoverish people. All of these are anti-life. We can't call ourselves authentically pro-life unless we stand against all of the levels of death. Very few people are consistent here. At the top of the spiral of violence sits the devil. The word devil, like demon, is a personification of a power that is hard to name or describe because it's so disguised and even idolized as good and necessary. If the world is hidden structural violence, then the devil is sanctified and legitimated violence. Violence that is deemed necessary to control the angry flesh and the world run amok. The diabolical is by definition too big to fail and above criticism, which is precisely what gives anything its demonic power. It is a third level of necessary good to control all the disorder and violence at the first and second levels. It is sacralized and above criticism. This might take the form of the military-industrial complex, as President Eisenhower called it after he left office. The legal system, the penal system, unjust tax codes and voting rights, the highly self-rewarding medical and banking systems, corporations over people, the idolatry of fame, celebrities and athletes, and even organized religion itself. Note, the first demon in Mark's gospel is found in the synagogue. See Mark 1:23. The only way the devil can get away with being the devil is that he must disguise himself as an angel of light. 2 Corinthians 11:15. Devils always look like necessary evil, or the lesser of two evils, and thus they are too big to fail and too important to expose. We need and admire them all too much. So as we say, they get away with murder. If we do not recognize the roots of evil at the disguised structural level, we are largely wasting our time simply focusing on merely individualized sin, the flesh, and we have almost no chance of recognizing our real devils, who are always disguised as angels of light. Remember, Lucifer means light bearer. The spiral of violence is complete, and much of history has been trapped inside of it, thinking that the evil could be eliminated merely by shaming and punishing individuals who are often just doing what they learned from the system and from the devil. Let us take this moment to rest in truth. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The warrior archetype, The warrior is a timeless primal archetype at the core of both individuals and groups. Men especially are attracted to warrior energy. All the hunters, defenders, athletes, guards, knights, and samurais are in fact telling us there's something valuable about focus, determination, and courage for the common good. In the developed world, warrior energy is, thank God, often sublimated into activities of business and sports. But even here, a clear goal towards a larger good beyond self and for purposes greater than prestige and power is usually absent. The true warrior has largely morphed into the celebrity, which hardly makes it warrior energy anymore. The perennial weakness of warrior energy, according to Robert Moore, is that it lacks breadth and depth. Focus and determination are good, but that's not everything. The secret of a good warrior is that one must be in tutelage to a good and wise leader. The warrior without a good king or queen has no wisdom, temperance, no balance, no final goals beyond tracking, fighting, and killing the enemy. The warrior archetype is not going away anytime soon, nor should it. Our job is to educate and redefine the warrior in the way that Moses, David, Jesus, Mary Magdalene, and Dorothy Day lived out their passion. Warrior energy is not in its essence wrong. It takes warrior energy to see through and stand against mass illusions of our time and be willing to pay the price of disobedience. It takes warrior energy to see through the soft rhetoric of support our troops, which cleverly diverts from the objective evil of war. It takes warrior energy to walk to a different drum, disbelieve the patriotic trivia, and re-believe in the tradition of nonviolence, civil resistance, and martyrdom, the way of the cross. The warrior in all of us is desperately seeking for something heroic, transcendent, or self-sacrificing. Mark Kurlansky suggests how nonviolence might help us recover true warrior energy. Mark writes, "Pacifism is passive, but nonviolence is active. Pacifism is harmless and therefore easier to accept than nonviolence, which is dangerous. When Jesus said that an enemy should be won over through the power of love, he was preaching nonviolence." End quote. Nonviolence requires courageous love. Thomas Merton writes that nonviolence implies a kind of bravery far different from violence. In the use of force, one simplifies the situation by assuming that the evil to be overcome is clear-cut, definite, and irreversible. Hence, there remains but one thing, to eliminate it. Any dialogue with the sinner, any suggestion of the irreversibility of this act, only means faltering and failure. Failure to eliminate evil is itself a defeat. Anything that even remotely risks such defeat is itself capitulation to evil. The irreversibility of evil then reaches out to contaminate even the tolerant thought of the hesitant crusader who momentarily doubts the total evil of the enemy he is about to eliminate. End quote. Nonviolence, on the other hand, comes from an awareness that I am the enemy and the enemy is me. I cannot destroy the other without destroying myself. I must embrace my enemy just as I welcome my own shadow. Francis of Assisi said, "I am the herald of the great king." Francis never stopped being a warrior knight. He just found a greater king. His image of self and victory changed. His goals grew broader, his heart deeper. He was still ready to spill blood for the cause, but now it led him to a personal visit to the Sultan in Egypt in the very midst of the bloody Christian crusades. He was prepared to offer his male milk, his blood, not for the violent death of an enemy, but for the nonviolent victory of love. Warrior energy needs to be wholly dedicated and given somewhere or to something. It must be focused and released for the warrior to know that she or he is alive and has character. Our work is to find worthy causes and goals to receive worthy warrior energy. Let us take this moment to connect to warrior energy. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. Jesus lived a nonviolent life, taught it, and died it. Yet the tradition that proceeded from his teachings didn't even understand the concept enough to have a word for it. Mark Kurlansky writes that the concept has been praised by every major religion. Throughout history, there have been practitioners of nonviolence. Yet, while every major religion has a word for violence, there is no word to express the idea of nonviolence except that it is not another idea. It is not violent. In Sanskrit, the word for violence is himsa, H-I-M-S-A, which means harm. And the negation of himsa, just as nonviolence is the negation of violence, is ahimsa, not doing harm. The word nonviolence didn't even exist in the English or German languages until the early 1900s. Gandhi coined a new term, satyagraha, because passive resistance didn't truly express what he was doing. Satyagraha combines the Sanskrit word sat, which means being or truth, with graha, holding firm to or remaining steadfast in. It is often translated as truth force or soul force. Jonathan Schell describes satyagraha as direct action without violence in support of the actor's beliefs, the truth in the person. The philosophy of satyagraha describes nonviolent action in which the actors refuse to cooperate with laws that they regard as unjust or otherwise offensive to their consciences, accompanied by a willingness to suffer the consequences. End quote. Now consciousness and awareness have evolved so that we can talk about such things. Restorative justice has only become a common phrase in the last 30 years. Previously, when people heard the word justice, it almost always implied merely retributive justice. Yet the prophets and Jesus clearly practiced restorative justice. Jesus never punished anybody. The toothpaste is out of the tube. There are now enough people who know the big picture of Jesus' thrilling and alluring vision of God that this great turning cannot be stopped. There are enough people going on solid inner journeys that it is not merely ideological or theoretical anymore. For the first time on a broad basis, future reformations can come from the inside out and from the bottom up in a positive, nonviolent way. Only now has human consciousness evolved enough to think and act this way. Before, it was quite rare, even among many otherwise saints. The big questions are more and more being answered at a peaceful and dialogical level with no need to directly oppose, punish, or reject other people. I sense the urgency of the Holy Spirit with 7 billion humans now on the planet at the same time. Our future is either nonviolent or there is no future. It seems to me that true progress, or the gospel hope that we have, is not naively optimistic, nor is it a straight line without regressions. It is signed with the cross, as we Christians would say. Knowing this ahead of time will keep you on the path forward without despair or cynicism, which otherwise will almost surely take over. Let us take this moment to connect to our soul force. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The practice this week is titled Loving Kindness. We all need to practice being kind, particularly to ourselves. It is only when we first reconnect with the infinite love that is our ground of being that we can extend that love to others through nonviolent actions. When we remember that we are love, we can truly wish even our enemies well. The Buddhist practice of metta, loving kindness, is a wonderful way to grow kindness for yourself and for others. Begin by sitting in silence and finding the place of loving kindness within you. Then speak the following statements aloud. May I be free from inner and outer harm and danger. May I be safe and protected. May I be free of mental suffering or distress. May I be free of mental suffering or distress. May I be happy. May I be free of physical pain and suffering. May I be healthy and strong. May I be able to live in this world happily, peacefully, joyfully, with ease. Repeat these affirmations as many times as you wish. When you are ready, replace the I in each statement with someone else's name. You might follow the sequence from the Maitri practice, another word for loving kindness, that I introduced a few weeks ago, gradually widening the flow of love to include a beloved, a friend, an acquaintance, someone who has hurt you, and finally the whole universe. Thank you for being with me. May your days be filled with loving kindness and a nonviolent reformation. Blessings to all.